James Joyce used to talk about writing as though you were sending a telegram and each word gushed so much. But so that's a beginning. It's what you start aiming for. But I'm against driving yourself crazy unless you have to. I think you let them grow the way you let trees and plants grow. And you don't dig for them unless you really have to. It's always, your dreams come along the same way. They come perfectly free. You didn't ask them, you didn't construct them. They come along and they usually have a lot of meaning. And I think if you give the poems a chance to flow, what you have to be regular about in some way is sitting down every so often and writing. Then the poems become encouraged to flow along, and after you've done a certain amount of it, they flow naturally to what they want to say, and what's in you in that sense you want to say too. But I think it's just a matter, you do just as you're doing, you have to have the habit of working on the project all the time, and then the good moments come along by themselves as happy surprises and as graces. But so you put yourself in a place where grace can flow to you.
What? Who's that? That's Robert Lax, my friends. Robert Lax. Welcome to the What Are Poems podcast. The only poetry podcast not seeped in pretension. That's my Allstate man impression, as you know. If you've been listening to the podcast, if you've been with us, that's him. Allstate stands. Allstate stands. I have Allstate. No, I don't have Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. How about that? We talked about it, didn't we? That insurance commercials are our national. It's the only thing that keeps us together. The only thing that brings apart, brings together Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, and big game hunters, is our ability to begin and finish a insurance commercial with absolute ease. If you say liberty, liberty, someone else is going to hit you with that last liberty, liberty, liberty. You know, Nationwide is on your side. Allstate stands. Remember the mayhem? What the hell is going on? Robert Lax, what was he talking about? Poetry, baby. Poetry. How to write poetry, how to be poetry, who is poetry. It's not a guy. There's no guy named Donald Poetry. Poetry could be many things. Poetry can be, a couple of sentences strung together that suddenly have meaning. Nouns, verbs, adjectives, so on and so forth. And it could also be Chinese, like your dumplings. Those are haikus, which we've never spoken of here on What Are Poems, but I feel like we're going too soon. Can I tell you something? Can we talk about something? How about heroics? How about when all of a sudden in your life you're doing something heroic? I am not the heroic type. I can't remember a moment when I was heroic. Others will probably say different. Maybe they, you see things from different perspectives. And being the sort of down in the dumps neurotic that I am, I've never seen heroics done by myself. But I've stuck up for people, I guess. I've done some things. You're supposed to like yourself, they say. Someone said that. Probably Jane Lynch. Remember her? Tall, blonde-haired, part of the lesbian continuum. Jane Lynch. Oh, Jane Lynch. Am I okay? Can I like myself, Jane Lynch? Sure, Jake. I don't know why Jane Lynch is Mickey Mouse in my head. Jane Lynch is the new Mickey Mouse. You heard it here on What Are Poems, the only podcast or something that I say all the time. But anyway, the other day, I work in a public school. Public schools are in disarray. I don't know if you know this, but they haven't given anything to education in 100 years. Maybe FDR was like, get those kids some pencils. But he was probably that's also Cary Grant. Get those kids some pencils. That's also how Cary Grant speaks. I don't know if FDR spoke like that. But the last time someone gave anything to the American public education system was in 1944, right before American involvement in World War II. And FDR was sitting there in a drafty old room in his wheelchair. And he turned to Eleanor and he said, "Eleanor, get those kids some pencils." And they did. They sent Dixon Ticonderogas all across the nation. And the children rejoiced. And they wrote their names in big letters. And they said, "Thank you, President Roosevelt." None of that is true. Except for the part that the government does not care about children in public schools. So far as to say that now we've created these things called charter schools where the parents can get together and they could hire their own teachers and they can ensure an education for their children, or they can send them to private schools where there's not 40 kids in a classroom and, you know, they could still afford to maybe get a hamster or get a goldfish in those classrooms, and the kids won't poison them because, for the most part, those kids don't have psychological disorders brought upon by poverty and abuse. The public school system's what I'm talking about here, folks. And the other day, I'm working in the public school there. I'm in the library. The library, of course, is not used, and all the other janitors that I work with will tell you that. They'll say we should just throw out all the books because kids don't read them anymore. You know, it's the opposite of what's happening in the South. At least those people in the South, you know, that don't have maybe access to the information superhighway that we have. You know, I always think of that the South is just like a dusty old bowl where people walk around in overalls without the internet. But at least those people are afraid of books. At least they're afraid of the knowledge inside the book. So they want to burn it. So in a way, you're almost like, well, at least those people fear books. At least they know that they have the ability to change lives to the written word, literature. At least it has the ability to influence people. They fear it. They fear the knowledge. That's nice, kind of. The people I work with up here in the Wilkes-Barre area in the great Northeast, they don't care what happens to books. Damn the books, you know? So there's this leak. There's leaks all over the school because it's a public school and nobody really cares what's happening in there. But there's giant leaks. Water just flows down, lands on tables, lands on desks, lands on cleaning ladies. Basically, like, the entire institution is spitting on us just for trying to clean it up. But this giant leak comes in the library and the water's flowing down onto the bookshelves. So I see it, and of course, me being the old sensitive soul I am, I'm completely disgusted. I'm sad. I say, oh God, the books. So I head on over, folks, and where do I end up? It's almost like we're on the road to destiny here. The man with the poetry podcast, who's a janitor at a public school, who people think is unassuming and stupid and doesn't know how to press record on a microphone, comes upon the poetry section being flooded by dank, dirty, rust-filled water. So I'm reaching. I'm trying to grab the books off the shelf. I'm seeing Marianne Moore. I'm seeing our Walt Whitman. I'm seeing all our friends, Emily Dickinson. I even grabbed anti-Semite Ezra Pound out of the waterfall of scum that leaked through the ceiling. So I tried to save all of them that I could, and I was drying them. And I was trying to get something on them so I could dry the pages so they weren't ruined. And I said, oh my God, the books are destroyed. It's the poetry section. It's destroyed here. And the guy working with me looks at me and he says, you know what he says? He says, it doesn't matter. We were going to get rid of those books anyway. My God. What kind of world have we ended up in? That's what I want to know. Where the hell are we? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe they are just carcasses, you know? Maybe they are just the flesh, the book. Maybe the soul, maybe the poetry, the words inside. Maybe that the words that have reached the children already are already inside their minds and have affected them and have made them live more empathetic lives, the way that poetry creates empathy in this world. Maybe that happened. Maybe I'm just seeing the bones and the skin all covered in water, a sort of holy baptism that set them free At last, from the chambers of a library not used, where they collect dust and are ridiculed by men who hardly read. What is this world, huh? I don't know, but today, it felt like a spiritual moment, though, to me, oddly enough. The most spiritual moment I've had as a janitor thus far. I don't think I'll have another one. Fuck. Hey, Robert Lax, he's spiritual. He's going to tell you stuff. He's got poem after poems. They're just kind of like, they're just jams like this. One word at a time, I believe that all people should stop their fight. I believe that one should blow a whistle or sing or play on the lute. For him, walking, praying, and writing, it's all the same. There's no seam, as it's said by some people. This fella, Steve Giorgio. Once Giorgio saw his friend running a single word, river, over and over. This is Robert Lax. He asked him, why? I want to live with the word for a while, Lax said. Maybe that's it for all of us, huh? We all just, all of us poetry enthusiasts, all of us sensitive artistic types, the guys and gals in the movies that don't get Molly Ringwald, us? Molly Ringwald, what a dated reference. Is there somebody new? Selena Gomez? I'm too old for Selena Gomez. I'm too young for Ringwald. Where do I live? Buffy the Vampire Slayer? Could it be you? Are you the one that I cannot get? Wow. Hey, when we come back, more Robert Lax, more thoughts on the meaning of life. Are books skeletons? Is the soul the words that we've already read? It's a hot one here in Pennsylvania. It's like 97 degrees. My dad's driving around in a Buick with no windows, with the windows up. Explain it. They're your parents. They get older. Okay, I'll be back.
That's what college is about. It's about growing up, and it's about moving on and leaving things behind that you might not necessarily be ready to do.
Thank you, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Little advice from her. Not so poetic as Robert Lax, but, you know, I thought maybe find something Buffy the Vampire Slayer said because she, I guess, was my generation's Selena Gomez. Have you watched Only Murders in the Building? Did I say this last week? I'm losing my mind, folks. Let's get into Robert Lax, shall we? Robert Lax, born in 1915 on November 30th, was an American poet known in particular for his associations with Trappist monk and writer Thomas Merton. Another friend of his youth was the painter Ad Reinhardt. After a long period of drifting from job to job about the world, Lax settled on the island of Patmos during the later part of his life. Considered by some to be a self-exiled hermit, he nonetheless welcomed visitors to his home, but did nothing to court publicity or expand his literary career or reputation. Lax was born to Sigmund and Rebecca Lax. His father had immigrated to the United States from Austria at the age of 16. When Robert was in eighth grade, the family moved to Elmhurst, Queens. He first met the future painter, Ad Reinhardt, at Elmhurst Newtown High School. Lax attended Columbia University in New York City, where he studied with the poet and critic Mark Van Doren. As a student there in the late 1930s, he worked on the college humor magazine Gesture with a classmate who became a close lifetime friend, Thomas Merton. Merton? I don't know how to say this name, guys. Merton. But this dude, this TM, Thomas Merton, he's, him and Lax will eventually kind of write these crazy letters back and forth together, and it ends up getting bound into a book. We should still be writing letters. I worry about this all the time. You know that. I think I've expressed it here on What Are Poems before. If we stopped writing letters, We're stopping the layman's view on American history. My God, what if it comes down to, in the future, they look back and they say, what was 2022 like? And they had to rely on are Facebook posts and tweets and text messages that are abbreviated all to hell. And, you know, Poppy Harlow's opinion on CNN, God forbid, with that hair she has. I always think of that lady's hair and it makes me sick. That's my own problem, not yours. So he's working for this Jester magazine, writing for this humor magazine at Columbia University. And the other members on the staff are Ed Rice, the founder and editor of Jubilee magazine, to which all three men contributed in the 1950s and 60s, and Ad Reinhardt, the painter. In his biography, The Seven-Story Mountain, Merton describes Lax at a meeting with other Jester staff. This is how he explains him. Taller than them all and more serious, with a long face like a horse and a great mane of black hair on top of it, Bob Lax meditated on some incomprehensible woe. Mark Van Doren has commented that the woe, I now believe, was that Lax could not state his bliss, his love of the world and all things, all persons in it. That's right, folks. We're finally reading about a guy who just likes life. He's the Jane Lynch of 1930s New York. Oh, boy! Remember Jane Lynch? After graduating in 1938, Lax joined the staff of The New Yorker, working his way up to assistant poetry editor. What an era. What an age, 1938. The New Yorker as an assistant poetry editor. There's a job for an assistant poetry editor. That's great stuff. This country was once a great place. Right, Jane Lynch? That's right! He was also a poetry editor for Time magazine, wrote screenplays in Hollywood, and taught at both the University of North Carolina and Connecticut College for Women. Around 1941, he and Merton volunteered for a couple of weeks at Catherine Doherty's Friendship House in Harlem. Lax converted from Judaism to Catholicism in 1943, 5 years after Thomas. And old Ed Rice, the founder of the Jubilee magazine, who worked with them at the Jester, was their godfather. He was the godfather to both men. They both convert. Could you imagine? Could you imagine that now? We have no spirituality in this country now. We have nothing. We have become agnostic wanderers, right? We're Saturn people. We're more reliant on... We're uncomfortable with the idea of God. And it's because of the oppression. It's because what they did in the 80s. It's the priest, really, right? I don't know. It's your own thing, your spirituality. You got to find it yourself. But the idea of these men coming upon something and accepting something and then saying to their buddy, hey, you mind being my godfather, Ed Rice? I couldn't imagine saying that to Ed Rice. I couldn't imagine knowing Ed Rice. But Lax desires a simple life. So he wanders, working in circuses in Canada as a clown and an expert juggler. It was traveling with the Christiani Brothers Circus in 1949 that enabled him to generate material for his collection, The Circus of the Sun. Although that was not published until 1959. Hey, it's been a long time since my air conditioner kicked on, but like I said, it's 97 degrees. I'll be right back. I got to shut that off. Can't have that zooming around in this freaking thing, can we? But what a time to lead off. Hey, he's joined the circus. We'll be right back. Who is our Gomez? Who is our Selena Gomez? Write that in. I'm back. When we left off, Robert Lax was at the circus. He writes this whole collection called The Circus in the Sun. Now he's joined these people. See, The Circus in the Sun, it's a poem. It's one poem, but it's a giant poem. Kind of like the Cantos by our enemy Ezra Pound. It's first published in 1959 by Journeyman Press, and it consists of a cycle of 31 short poems that tell the story of, wait for it, a traveling circus. The poem follows a day in the life of a circus as they arrive in a new town, set up, rehearse, perform, and take down the circus. It is arranged according to the phases of the day, morning, afternoon, evening, the midway, and night. I don't know what the midway is. You've been living in the midway? That's probably when I get that second wind. Start running around the house. Remember 9 o'clock when me and my brother were children? We'd be freaking running around, jumping from couch to couch, screaming, pulling out our hair. I remember us watching Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? His name's Michael Davies. He came across the bottom of the screen. We were screaming, jumping up and down. My father came out. He said, shut up, your mother's sleeping. We couldn't help it. We got the zoomies around that hour, as my cat Elliot does now. That's when he starts racing. He goes, time to party, baby. 9:03, 2 hours before the news. right? When's the news come on? This poem deliberately aligns with the hours, and the title alludes to the song written by Francis of Assisi, Canticle of the Sun. Lax used his own experience traveling with the brothers in the circus, where he would sometimes perform as a clown, as inspiration for the poem. In writing about the circus, Lax was able to write about theological ideas of creation and Christian allegory. Widely considered the best poem, his best poem, it marks the conclusion of the early lyrical phase. This is before he just starts writing like words over and over again of Lax's career, before he started writing experimental minimalist poetry. So yeah, basically he ends up writing this thing, joining that circus because he meets them through this guy named Leonard Robinson, who doesn't really matter. I mean, he matters to whoever his family is, but not to me right now. But he's sent by him to write a piece about a family of acrobats, the Christiani family. And he just loves them. You know, they're just awesome. They're probably flipping all over the place in those, like, leotard things. They're going, welcome to the circus. Welcome to the circus. Let's play in the circus, you know. That's as acrobats are, right? That's not like an offensive Italian thing I'm doing, I don't think. Italians, you can email me at onearpoemspodcast@gmail.com if my impression of the Christiani family is indeed a terrible stereotype. But I think they were just flipping around Lax. They go, come on, let's go. Let's be part of the circus. Everybody loves to watch me flip. I flip over my brother flips over me, my sister flips over my brother, we all land on our feet and we are the circus. We need a clown, we need a juggler. You wanna join? He does join. So over the next 3 years, as he spends the next few months traveling with the family in their circus, and over those next 3 years he'd work on what would become the Circus of the Sun. So in the summer of 49, he leaves the circus, and he goes to live with this guy, Robert Gibney. And lives there for a while, and he still writes about the circus. And then he ends up hanging out in a basement of a library at St. Bonaventure University. And he works on a poem every day about the circus. And then he finally gets it published, and everybody loves it. They say, after it's published, E. Cummings is like, his mind's blowing. He writes about the circus too, E. Cummings. Remember him? He talked like Winnie the Pooh, and we didn't really care for him that much, but maybe you did, I didn't. And E. Cummings says, hey, come over to my house, let's drink tea and talk about the circus. And despite the state and admiration of Cummings and many other poets, it's just not widely reviewed, and people aren't totally into it, but now it's like, holy fuck, that guy was at the circus and he was writing a lyrical poem. So that's that about that little part of his life. I found that interesting. It's not every day it happens. My friend used to always say, I'm going to go join the circus. I said, you won't do it. He never did it. This guy did it. Meanwhile, Lax is also helping Rice start the Jubilee, a lay Catholic magazine. In 1942, he becomes the roving editor of this beast. And they're writing essays in there all about Catholicism and all this stuff. And this ends up getting them to Paris. You know, we're all poets, must go. It's the pilgrimage. They got to eat crusty bread and pickpocket tourists like they do in Paris. By 1962, he found his way to the Greek islands. And he ends up moving to this place called Patmos, where he spent his last year seeking relative solitude. Lax said it was important to put yourself in a place where grace can flow, like we heard him say earlier. 62 to 67, his correspondence with Merton is written in a kind of comic argot, covered his early years in Greece, and was first published as A Catch of Anti-Letters in 78. Then there's more, and it's recollected and republished, as they'll do with poetry. The second time it's called When Prophecy Still Had a Voice. He starts receiving the awards, as they do for the poets. They make him, they give him an honor doctorate from St. Bonaventure University, where he wrote the circus poem in the basement, the King of Kings there. He ends up eventually heading back to New York. But he goes by boat. This is in 2000. He goes by ship from Southampton, accompanied by his niece and her husband because he wouldn't travel by air. And he dies in his sleep at the age of 84. Some people describe him as a freaking saint. They say, hey, this guy's the best, you know? He said there's no difference between him and a saint. They do say that about him, which is crazy. I gotta find the words. He had the words. He writes this. Here's something he wrote called here is his shorter history of Western civilization. He poked fun at tradition and its ideas about time and spiritual permutations over time. Egyptians, Babylons, Persians. Jews and Greeks. Christians. Rah, rah, rah. You old peach, Robert Lax. What's he got to say about things? Laxie, you got anything for me? There's the chickens on Patmos. You know?
Aimed. Have made pathways in the jungle, peaceful lakes. They have built new Edens, ever sweet and ever changing. By day, from town to town, we carry Eden.
He's deliberate when he speaks. We lack that, don't we? We're all blowhards anymore. We're all just blowhard people. Sad. This is his poem in honor of his friend, Thomas Metron, after he died. Ready? I can't find it. Uh-oh, we'll do that next week. Here's another one by him. We'll do this one. It's quick. It's 2 minutes. It's quick. Here it is. Alley Violinist. No? Oh, my God. Guys, I've really screwed up here. Hey, I gotta go, and I'll be back again.
I wish that when I was growing up, there was a character like Buffy, a strong female that was okay with who she was, not the smartest, not the prettiest. I didn't have that, and I think that's something so many girls can identify with. And she kicks butt, and that's pretty cool on top of that.
Remember the 90s when we all wanted to kick butt? You know who kicked butt? Robert Lax. He has that sort of spirituality that I find awesome. In a blurb for 33 Poems, William Maxwell, who had worked on The New Yorker with the poet, is quoted as commenting on Lax. To the best of my knowledge, a saint is simply all the things that he is. If you placed him among the Old Testament figures above the south portal of Charles, he wouldn't look odd. But although his output embodies a spiritual outlook, Lax was not into dogma. He was not a dogmatic writer. He owed as much to Eastern as he did to Western systems of spirituality. He meditated every day. He developed an appreciation for this sort of Eastern thought process, which is cool. He's great. Dig into him, guys. Find these poems that are just words, where he's just screwing around with your head, kind of just hitting different things, hitting different words. He had ones that's like the hill shouts, the sea shouts. But how he arranges them, it kind of becomes this kaleidoscope of a true story about the world, you know, of the world that we're just letting burn up, by the way, bunch of burners. Hey, when we come back, a poem that was written in You can submit your own poems to the podcast at whatarepoemspodcast@gmail.com. Another successful episode. Does Sarah Michelle Gellar have anything else to say?
So it's great, and it takes almost a pressure away from me because Buffy is so well-written and so clear.
Thank you, that's true. I didn't really watch that much Buffy. I watched it. I remember if I did watch it, it'd be on a small TV on my stomach. They don't have the TVs like they used to have, but these were like fuzzy little guys. Like, oh, Buffy's coming on. I feel like an adult. That was the first time I watched TV. I feel like Buffy the Vampire Slayer was the first time I watched TV alone. And I was like, this is something for me. I'm an adult. I didn't become like a Buffy the Vampire fan, but I remember feeling like an adult watching it. Well, there you go. We come back, a poem from a reader, and our poetry journey continues. So, speaking on spirituality, Christina wrote this poem in, and I will answer Ben's question that he emailed me that I thought was kind of funny. But here's June 24th, 2022. This is Christina's poems. When my sisters ache of grief, I am there as easily as remembering my lover whom I lost. I am there. Though I may have drifted off as they tossed and turned, or rested as their hands calloused and bled, when it is my turn to awaken, Mother Earth traces my brow in those shadows. As I open my eyes, my house hushes in waves like the silence and the sacred chime. I see the glow of sunset dim and red behind her moonlit eyes. I can feel my heart again breaking and crawling over my skin. As the eye sees in the light, the heart sees in the darkness. I hold my sister there, hold her in my arms. So familiar are we with this darkness. It is where we came. I like it, Christina. Precise. True. Real. And Ben, I don't always say what I'm drinking, but today I am drinking Sprite. I don't know if you heard me slurping it today. Most podcast people don't like when people are drinking and eating in the microphone. But apparently Ben, who didn't write me a poem, submit me a poem to the podcast, but he likes to know what I'm drinking. So today it is a Sprite that I got from a 2-liter in the refrigerator. Okay, folks, until next time. Peace and love, peace and love. Beef Jackie.